bounce.
Alright, what's up everybody? DJ Los Latino on the new intro mix. That's the first time I heard it actually, but it sounds pretty good.
You're the best, DJ.
Episode 13, lucky 13. We got some new crew members here. We got Taylor, what up Taylor, and Donnie.
How you doing?
On the show tonight, making their debut. We're going to talk a little Ty Lawson, a little Summer League, and then close out with a little few thoughts on the Clippers court and things. But let's get started with Ty Lawson. So, obviously, he got traded to the Rockets for pretty much nobody's. I mean, Nick Johnson's all right. Kostas, I'm not sure how you say his last name.
Papa Nicolaou.
A first-rounder. I mean, it's what are you going to do if you're Denver? Like, you had no leverage. I think that's a fairly decent haul at this point. I mean, they wanted to get rid of him before this, and now the DUI thing again.
Yeah, like they were just kind of just done with him. They've been trying to trade him for what feels like forever now.
Yeah, and it feels like, I mean, for me, everyone keeps talking about how Denver, you know, they could have waited and everything, but this isn't a video game. They're trying to get Emmanuel Mudiay as the starter. They don't want this thing to boil over, so I mean, they almost had to make a deal now. This was the best they could get.
There's not really much they could have waited for either. Since we heard, I guess, the only team outside of the Rockets that was even interested was the Lakers, and I must have given up one of those young guys for Ty Lawson, which seems pretty unlikely. Then, I mean, they can get a bunch of contracts they can waive and a potential first, then I guess they kind of had to do it.
I was really expecting the Kings to jump in. I was really expecting that.
Yeah, trade Rondo for him.
No, I was thinking like they were going to trade McLemore to a Rondo Lawson backcourt.
Yeah, of course. I mean, why not?
Trade Boogie.
Yeah, that would be some King shit to do.
George Karl, they probably had to hold him down. They probably were like, nope, Lawson is not on the market. You are crazy, old man.
Perfect guy for that 4-on-5, right? Perfect guy for that 4-on-5 offense. So.
Yeah, they got to try that out this year. So obviously, the DUI stuff makes him a bit of an unknown, and it's not really fair to say what's all going on. We don't really know clearly whether it's just bad decision making. I don't know. You can't really say like he's addicted, like an alcoholic. It's unfair to say that, but clearly something is going on where he's been making poor decisions lately. If he's prime Ty Lawson, how much do you guys think this affects Houston's status in the West? I mean, they were the 2 seed last year, and now you got Lawson. Like, I don't think it's enough to jump like Golden State. I still think Golden State's a favorite, but do you think this really changes anything?
I was talking to Matt Cianfrone, he also is a writer here with Friendly Bounce. I was talking to him last night. He watched the Nuggets for a very long time when he was writing about them. And he says Lawson will probably be like the perfect creator next to James Harden. He's that second creator that they can have with him. He can play off ball. He's reluctant to shoot the three, but with them playing Morey ball, he'll probably be a lot more interested in taking that shot. And really, I think they could use him well on the bench a little. They could use him to strengthen up that bench unit. They could have Beverly play with us. They could stagger it to where Beverly plays more with the starting unit, Lawson plays more with the second unit, and then they kind of just bring them all the starters back together later in the game.
Gives them a lot of versatility, too. Like, Beverly's the kind of guy that can pretty much play with anyone. They lose a lot of size playing together. But they still have enough bigs and mobile bigs like Terrence Jones and Demo to where they could probably make it work with a small ball group with Beverly and Lawson for at least a bit. I don't know
Lawson
how much it changes.
Lawson kills pick and roll. Like,
Lawson's a great pick and roll player. I mean, when you talk about fit, there's really two things you're talking about. And I mean, scheme fit, he's perfect. I don't think there's too much debate for that. He's a great fit for the Rockets. They're going to pay some space. He's a better shooter than people give him credit for. Like you said, he's reluctant. but it's not like he's Rondo back there. And they really needed that second creator. I think he's perfect for that. But you talk about his fit next to James Harden. You're relying a lot on either using an undersized lineup, like Taylor said, with Beverly, or you're relying on Ariza being a better defender on the perimeter than he was last year, or just rely on Dwight Howard to clean up on the defensive end. But obviously a worthwhile gamble because you're not really giving up anything that's going to affect you next year as a contender.
Yeah, that's sorry, go ahead, Taylor.
Even, you know, they got killed in the playoffs, specifically against the Warriors when Harden was on the bench. And like Donnie was just saying, it gives them another playmaker. So now when Harden's on the bench, the offense won't completely die. I don't know how much he'll be playing without Harden. It seems like they could play together for the most part. But it's just depth. And now Beverly potentially comes off the bench. And just it's a no-brainer for them, obviously.
I just think you put the best pick-and-roll big man in the NBA next to two of the best pick-and-roll ball handlers in the NBA. Like, that's just that sounds like a recipe for success.
Yeah, I mean, when you dunk down to that level, it's perfect. And sometimes that's what you got to do. Like, people sit here and they throw out a bunch of stuff, but when you put it at that simple level, they're going to figure it out, especially with that kind of talent. And Morey's always been a talent collect guy. He's not a big fit person. They'll figure it out. And they have enough talent that fits their scheme. But their offense is going to be amazing. So.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's an if he gets back to, you know, where he was 3 years ago or so. But regardless, he's going to improve the team, and you didn't give anything up.
Yeah, and if it's a total failure, if the DUIs are a bigger issue than we feared, was it next year's non-guaranteed anyways?
Yeah, it is now.
So make him a totally movable contract, or they can just dump him, like, this is a total non-risk move. It's a low-risk, high-reward move for the Rockets, in my opinion.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if they, like, obviously the Warriors are still the team to beat, but in the West, any help you can get when you got to go through that gauntlet. I mean, even now you got to deal with, like, the Jazz are going to be a problem. Probably not for the playoffs, but like you got to play them. Like,
yeah,
any help you can get in the West right now is huge. So I think it's definitely worthwhile for the Rockets to pick him up. But, yeah, it should be really interesting to see what they do if they sort of bring him off the bench more and let him just run that second unit, or if they try to play him together. It's going to be really interesting. Just another storyline for the West. But you guys have any sort of final thoughts on Lawson? Otherwise, we'll move on.
I mean, for me, I just think he's better than people give him credit for when he's right, as you said. I mean, you look at the numbers, he was fourth in assist rate in the league last year, and he had a pretty mediocre year for him, considering the last few years. He was fourth in assist rates on that Denver team. He's a really, really good passer out of the pick and roll and a really, really good pick and roll system. I just think the fit is perfect offensively if he can get right.
I agree. It's still obviously the Warriors and then everyone else. They're bringing back the same team that won it last year and won 82 games or whatever it was. I still think it puts the Rockets in the top five with the Clippers and Spurs and Oklahoma City, assuming they're all alive and healthy. And so, I don't know. I still don't think they can beat the Warriors with this team on paper, but they probably have a better chance than they did last year, of course.
They improved. The West is really hard. You got to get better.
Yeah. I mean, the West is sort of just get to the playoffs and then
figure it out later.
Matchups, for sure.
All right, well, we obviously got to wait and see on that, but definitely interesting. So, move on, talk a little Summer League. I think the Spurs just won the title tonight.
Yeah,
I
don't just won the title. Becky Hammon got a Gatorade bath.
Nice. Yeah, that was cool. I'm glad you got that chance. I don't know how much you guys watched it. I was out there for a few days. Did you guys have any favorite teams, favorite players, favorite moments that sort of stuck out to you? Obviously, you know, it doesn't really mean a whole lot, but it's still fun to finally see these guys. Anything that stuck out?
I missed most of Vegas, but I saw all of Orlando because I was there. And Stanley Johnson, it was just put him in that summer league system where there's no set defense to get in his way, and the offense is like all pick and rolls and minimal sets, and he just overpowers everyone. Stanley Johnson was a monster in Orlando, and far and away, outside of like Aaron Gordon, the best player there. He was the best rookie there easily, Stanley Johnson.
Yeah, Johnson, like when we play them, I worked with Xavier, and we play them in the Sweet 16. And, like, seeing him up close, that dude is just built. Like, I'm sure he's even put on more weight, but, like, the dude is so thick, it's ridiculous.
I talked to a scout there. Apparently, he's, like, 3.8% body fat. The rest is just muscle.
I think one underrated thing I didn't think a lot of us knew about before the summer league was Karl Towns passing. That's like that from game one. That was like the huge thing about him because we saw him in spurts. Obviously, Kentucky playing 5 minutes at a time, we couldn't really see him at his full game making self. Game. What am I saying? Playmaking self. So Minnesota's probably still gonna be horrible next year, but it's pretty easy to see how awesome they could be in like 3 years if he's as awesome as he looks.
Yeah, I mean, obviously another team in the West needs another loaded roster in a couple of years. But, I mean, my favorite thing, obviously, was Alan Crabb, who's an actual NBA player, fouling out of a summer league game, which is really hard to do. I mean, I don't even know how you get 10 fouls, but he did it, and that was impressive. And I think a close second for me was that the Knicks fans turned their opinion around on Porzingis so fast that he was going to be the worst draft pick ever at number 4, and now if he's worse than Dirk, they're all going to be disappointed. So that was probably my favorite thing of summer league because that's such a summer league moment. You see him against bad competition. And, I mean, I was pretty high on Porzingis. I think he's going to be a good player. But just the fact that he hit some incredible shots against some mediocre competition has changed everyone's opinion already. It's just kind of hilarious to me.
Yeah, I think
my favorite moment was the Hazonja dunk, which I actually missed live because I was interviewing, like, players in the hallway for audio, and all of a sudden I just heard this roar of like, this is media and players, like this is not fans. You just hear this roar of people. It's like, what just happened?
Hazonja showed out.
He sure did.
Well, it was funny. He was either like he was exactly what we kind of like think his NBA career might be. He had these incredible, awesome moments. And then he had just these terrible stretches of play where it's like, this guy's a top 5 pick.
Yeah. I think my favorite like single moment was I was sitting front row on like press row for Celtics Blazers. The game Crabb fouled out and some dude on I forget where he's from, but this dude's name is Jonathan Holmes and he's like backing somebody down, takes like this turnaround fadeaway, and McCollum was sitting on the bench for the Blazers, and he sees Holmes take the shot and just goes, hell nah. And it's just like complete brick. It's just like, it was pretty funny sitting close enough that you can hear the players talking trash to each other on the bench.
The funniest thing I heard in Orlando was PJ Harrison got called for a foul. I couldn't see what he got called for. I guess he was pushing the guy too hard or he pushed him off his spot. And he turned to the ref and just goes, I just lift more than him.
Yeah, that's what's awesome. Like, I don't, if anyone ever has a chance to go to summer league, even not as media, just as a fan, because you can get close. You sit right there. It's a pretty cool experience to see everything up that close. Obviously, I loved R.J. Hunter. It was pretty fun to see him shoot. Marcus Smart play defense.
Smart not know how to turn off the switch?
No, not at all. Rozier's the same way. They play just like 100% all the time. Marcus Smart, I'm sure other people are just like, dude, come on. It's summer league. Like,
he's that guy.
You already have a contract and like some... Some dude like from the D League is trying to show out, and Smart's just like smothering him. But the Wolves Lakers game, like 12,000 people showed up, and they had to open the upper deck, and Thomas and Mac That was pretty cool. The Laker fans were just – Laker fans are insane.
No. Until they booed their summer league team.
Yeah, they were booing their summer league team. Like,
hey, nuts. Mark Madsen welcomes that pressure, man. Mark Madsen welcomes that pressure. Did you see him after the game? You thought he lost game 7 the way he was reacting.
Jeez. But you guys have any other thoughts on summer league? Obviously, it's not really a big deal. It's just cool.
No, it's fun. I mean, you kind of get that persona from everybody. For instance, I realized as someone who lives in the Bulls area, Bobby Portis is going to stare at me for the next 7 years because he's just got the most intense eyes I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And even like during timeouts and stuff, they show him, and I think he's staring at me through the screen, and I'm a little scared. So bodes well for his NBA career if I'm scared and I'm sitting in my living room, but.
Like that Doug Levy vine where he just kind of like sneaks in and just stares at the camera what's up?
Exactly.
Yeah, after every Bulls game this year, I'm definitely going to have to look up the like USA Today images because just from Summer League, they only had a few games, but the pictures of Portis are hilarious.
Yeah,
his facial expressions are so great. All right, going to wrap things up. You guys have any thoughts on the Clippers? New court that they just debuted. I don't know if everybody listening saw it, but they dropped
the best they could have done. The best they could have done with that logo and the color scheme and all the bits they're trying to do. The worst thing, well, there are a lot of bad things about it, but the worst thing I think is the little lines on the end. I think it's after it says LA Clippers on the baseline, trying to act like it's some kind of nautical theme.
Yeah.
When they're just two lines, they're two lines touching each other, and that's as far as it goes.
Yeah, they definitely read like tried to make too much of that. Like going to our nautical roots. Like you could have done more than that.
I mean, go big or go home with that, right? Like
I'm just not with the boat. Why'd they do the circle with the basketball? Why didn't they just do the LAC logo? Why do they need the basketball there?
I don't know, because the logo's terrible and it looks like something like Adam Sandler made for Pixels. Like that's what I think it looks like, but
I mean, it's not the worst court ever. It's just it's.
No, I mean, yeah, they did an okay job considering the logo, but the logo matters so much for your court, and I mean, yeah. In my opinion, it's terrible. So.
Yeah, I thought they have like the thing on the baseline or the sideline right by midcourt that says Clipper Nation, that they definitely just invented.
That's gonna go.
They just made that up right now. Like, oh, we need something here. Like, we should have some writing here. How about Clipper Nation? All right.
that guy who came up with that is not keeping his job. So.
You guys have any final thoughts on anything that's happened in the basketball world lately? Otherwise, we'll call it a show.
August, late July is just dead zone. Dead zone.
Yeah, I mean, but... You know, this is the time anyone can overreact. I think this is the time of year that most fans are most positive, which is always fun on Twitter. Before Twitter, it was kind of a boring time. But now you can favorite everyone's tweets and show them to them in 6 months when their opinions about their favorite teams are terrible. So that's what I'm excited about.
Especially now that all Laker fans have turned on D'Angelo Russell after a couple of bad summer league games. He's a bust.
Right.
All right. There we go. Hold on. Here we go. Alright, well, that's the show for tonight. Taylor and Donnie, good debuts. DJ Lost Latino playing us out. We'll catch you guys later.
Later!